Blog Talk Radio.
Day, don't we? I believe we indeed do. Today's Iowa Caucus Day, which is not a porn thing, but it's, of course, the first stop in the election season. We don't know what the fuck is going to happen, and that's why this is so exciting. We basically have Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders 50-50 right now, according to the polls in Iowa. In some polls, Sanders is winning. In some polls, he's losing. On the Republican side, we have Donald Trump leading, but not by that much. I mean, a recent poll had him leading by 8, but overall, his lead, I don't think, is that much. In fact, it's like 4 points when you average all them out. And he doesn't have much of a ground game in Iowa. He hasn't been there as much as the other candidates. So it's up in the air in that respect, too. Now, here's the deal, man. If Trump goes on to win Iowa, I think it's going to be hard for anybody to overcome him. I really do. I think that if he wins Iowa, he might, I mean, the nomination might just be his, period, which is a scary thought. So in a weird way, you might actually want to root for Ted Cruz today or Marco Rubio today. I've actually said before, I think Ted Cruz is going to win Iowa because Iowa has a history. They voted for Mike Huckabee 1 year, Rick Santorum another year. They were underdogs. They came in there down in the polls, and they ended up winning. So stuff like that happens in Iowa. Now, on the Democratic side, I actually think a Bernie win would help him tremendously. And again, it's 50-50 on the Democratic side who's going to win. So we'll see, man, but it's a fucking exciting day. And I, of course, am not going to be talking about that specifically. But what I will be talking about is this little Democratic debate on Thursday night that we haven't spoken about since it happened. So buckle up. We got a long breakdown coming for you like all the other debate breakdowns. In fact, I want to go ahead and kick it off right now with just that. And I'll start with a general debate breakdown and tell you guys my main takeaways, I guess you can say. Okay, let's do it. So who won the Fox News GOP debate? Of course, this is the last debate before the Iowa caucus, which is today. Now, in my opinion, on substance, it's Rand Paul hands down. It's not even close. The sad part of this is that's fairly irrelevant to the GOP, so it doesn't even really matter that Rand Paul was more factual than anybody else on stage, and he said way more intelligent things. He made really strong arguments, man. There's no denying that, in my opinion. But again, I don't know how much of an impact that has in a Republican primary race. Now, on the issue of style, I actually think that Chris Christie did a fantastic job. Again, that probably won't matter because he's so far back in the polls anyway. But when you look at it through the lens of just style, I think he filled the role of the faux straight shooter that he always tries to play, where as everybody else is bickering over personal stuff, he interjects with, well, I'm the ideas guy, and I care about the people at home. I don't care about this interpersonal nonsense here, and I get stuff done, and I'm a governor in a liberal state who happened to get conservative priorities through, and yada, yada, yada. Again, I don't think it's going to matter that, in my opinion, he did well, but he did do well. Now, in terms of the polls, I want to jump right into that here because we have the Time poll, which has the following results. Number one, so finishing first in the debate, is Trump, even though he wasn't there, percent of the vote. Rand Paul came in second, so I guess I was wrong about what I said before. Some people indeed did think, yeah, he won because he made the most sense. 21% for him, Marco Rubio had 12%. He comes in third fairly comfortably. Then we have Ted Cruz at 7%. We have Jeb Bush at 4%, which may be his best showing yet. And everybody else is off the cliff of irrelevancy and in Nowheresville. Now, when you go to the Iowa poll specifically, which is really more important in this broader conversation, you're beginning to see a picture of how it's going to unfold there. Now, again, the Iowa caucus is tonight. I want to give you guys a little preview as to how people are sitting in the polls, specifically in Iowa. The national polls reflect this to one degree or another, but to be clear, Trump has a much larger lead nationally than he does in Iowa, although he is leading in Iowa. So when you get specifically to the Iowa polls, Trump is 28.6%. He's leading. Cruz is number two at 23.9%. Rubio's at 16.9%. Carson's at 7.7%. Rand Paul's at 4.1%, tied with Bush, who's also at 4.1%. Huckabee's at 3.1%. And then you have Kasich, Fiorina, Christie, and Santorum lagging way behind. Now, Iowa really does have a trend of, on the Republican side at least, voting for people that do not end up being successful in the long run. So the last election, I believe they voted for, was it Santorum or Huckabee? I actually forget which was which, but in the last two election cycles, they voted for Huckabee 1 year, Santorum the other year, and we know how they ended up faring in the election overall. So based off that and the fact that Donald Trump doesn't really have a strong ground game in Iowa, he's not there a lot. The other candidates have basically set up shop there and are really busy there all the time. Based off of that, I'm going to go ahead and say that I personally think Cruz is going to win in Iowa. How much of an effect will that have on the overall election? Probably not much, because like I said, if history is any indication here on the Republican side, that person does not go on to win the nomination. Now, by the time you're watching this video, you might already know who won the Iowa caucus, and perhaps I'm dead wrong. But also, perhaps I'm right, and we'll see. But if Donald Trump does win in Iowa, I do think that it's going to be hard for anybody to beat him in the long run. Now, again, I know this kind of contradicts what I said before about how Iowa has a history of not picking the Republican who ends up getting the nomination. But if Trump does win in Iowa, I think that that trend might change, because he has such a giant lead everywhere else that it's hard to even fathom anybody overcoming it. And it's sad to say, but it's true if you look at the numbers and if you believe in facts. So we're going to find out, man, but my prediction is that you'll probably have Cruz win, and then Trump and Rubio will be close behind, and then everybody else, it's a toss-up. Who the fuck knows where they're going to finish? Now, on the Democratic side, it really is a coin flip. I mean, it's basically 50-50. When you look at all the polls, you see some polls Hillary's winning, some polls Bernie Sanders is winning. And with this one, I think that if Bernie wins, it's going to help him so much for in the long run, because he'll get much more press. They have to cover him if he wins Iowa. And this is what happened with Obama. If I'm not mistaken, I think Obama beat Hillary in the Iowa caucus the last time around, and Obama went on to get the nomination. And historically, we know that as of right now, Bernie's actually doing better in the national polls than Obama was against Hillary, and Obama went on to become president. So it's really, really interesting. It's a fascinating day that we have today for politics. And there's my general breakdown of the Republican debate here and what I think is going to happen in Iowa, but we'll know very soon. Okay, next. Now, let's get into some specific stuff with the Republican debate. And we'll start with Mr. Smarmy Pants himself, Ted Cruz. Ted Cruz went full Looney Tunes at the Republican debate on the issue of foreign policy. Perhaps this is unsurprising. Let's check it out.
Well, Chris, I will apologize to nobody for the vigorousness with which I will fight terrorism, go after ISIS, hunt them down wherever they are, and utterly and completely destroy ISIS. You know, you claim it is tough talk to discuss carpet bombing. It is not tough talk It is a different fundamental military strategy than what we've seen from Barack Obama. Barack Obama right now, number one, over 7 years, has dramatically degraded our military. You know, just 2 weeks ago was the 25th anniversary of the first Persian Gulf War. When that war began, we had 8,000 planes. Today we have about 4,000. When that war began, we had 529 ships. Today we have 272. You want to know what carpet bombing is? It's what we did in the first Persian Gulf War. 1,100 air attacks a day. Saturation bombing that utterly destroyed the enemy. Right now, Barack Obama is launching between 15 and 30 air attacks a day. He's not arming the Kurds. We need to define the enemy. We need to rebuild the military to defeat the enemy, and we need to be focused and lift the rules of engagement so we're not sending our fighting men and women into combat with their arms tied behind their backs.
For those of you who don't speak politics, the lift the rules of engagement line that you just heard thrown out there, that means ignore international law, ignore the Constitution, ignore our own laws here, and get the lawyers off the back of the military. Let them do whatever the fuck they want and then defend them. And then act like we can do no wrong by definition because we're the good guys, so everybody shut the fuck up. That's a horrible idea. What's supposed to make us better than our enemies is that we actually abide by them and we are supposed to apply the rules to ourselves. You know, this idea of look away when we do the same things that the bad guys do, well, we mean well, so it's all right. That's not objective. You're quite literally saying, let's bake hypocrisy into the cake of the system here. Let's do a double standard and then act like that's cool. No, that's not cool. That's not okay. And you're basically advertising to the world that you're a bad guy if that's your position. So that's point number one. Point number two is, you got to stop with this. Rebuild the military. We have to rebuild the military. You hear this from virtually every single candidate except Rand Paul, to his credit. And they're just pulling it directly out of their ass. Rebuild the military? We already have a gigantic, tremendous military that's literally the strongest military in human history. What do you mean rebuild it? We've shown this chart before, but we spend more than the next 14 countries combined, and most of them are our allies, and this is specifically for military spending. Now, some places say, hey, it's bigger than the next 8 countries, bigger than the next 10. The real number is 14. We spend more than the next 14 biggest militaries combined. Look, man, I'm not a pacifist. I'm a non-interventionist. Am I okay with having the biggest military in the world? Sure, but we can cut our military by 50% and still have the biggest military in the world by a mile and a half. So these guys are simply living in fairy tale land when they say, oh my God, our military is so weak, it's so defeated, we need to rebuild it. Even though it's already the biggest military ever in human history and we dwarf everybody else, it's still too small, gotta rebuild it. It's like they're advertising the fact that they're little weak bitches. It's already gigantic. Like, I'm scared. I know I have an arsenal, but I need 7 arsenals to feel safe because I'm a little bitch. Okay, and then the next thing is, when you talk about carpet bombing, understand that that is guaranteed to kill massive numbers of civilians. Why? Because of exactly how ISIS is set up at the moment. They're in Raqqa, Syria, where they're embedded with thousands of civilians. Now, if you decide, I don't care, I'm going to go into all the areas that ISIS took over through force, and I'm going to bomb everybody in sight, what's going to happen is you're feeding into what ISIS wants you to do, because then they get to go to the same people who they're terrorizing right now, and they took over by force, and they get to say, well, look, now you have a choice. You might not like us, but now the Americans are dropping bombs and killing your nephew and your niece and your kid and your aunt and your uncle. So, I mean, here's an AK-47. Fight on our side, or we'll protect you. Back us up, because at least we're against those big bad Americans who are destroying you and your family. So you're giving them an opportunity to recruit more. When you kill civilians, and you don't care about it, as Ted Cruz doesn't, well, you're giving them a message that will resonate. If you don't do that, their message won't resonate nearly as much Because they went in there and they're theocratic authoritarians who are terrorists who are terrorizing the people that are there. A lot of the people are not on their fucking side to begin with, but they have to deal with it because they don't have the guns and the weapons and the manpower to take them over at the moment. So he wants to do something that is counterproductive, and we know it's counterproductive because we've seen the numbers, we've seen the studies. Ever since the war on terror began, because we went in guns blazing and killed so many civilians, you've net increased the number of terrorists in the world. So you have to be smart about it. Everybody's against ISIS. It's just, what's the most intelligent way to actually defeat their message and win in the long run? Which leads to my final point here, which is, I love how this is Ted Cruz 101. He starts off with, I will apologize to nobody for being against ISIS. Who the fuck asked you to apologize for that? Nobody did. It's just those cheap, easy applause lines. It's red meat for the base where they go, oh, yeah, man, I don't like ISIS neither. This guy here don't like ISIS. Oh, he's a genius. Ted gonna win the presidency. That's not an argument. That's not a point. That's a silly thing to say. We obviously are all against ISIS. It's what's the most intelligent way to defeat them and win in the long run, specifically in the realm of ideas. So their recruitment tactics, which keep them afloat to this point. So, Ted Cruz, you know, silly on every point, wrong on every point, just a lack of any serious analysis or deep thought or policy solution, which is exactly what you would expect from a guy like Ted Cruz. Okay, next here. We go to Chris Christie to mock him. I got a little bit for everybody today. I even got some of the undercard stuff. How you like them apples? Okay. Chris Christie was asked what specifically he would cut in the federal government, and his answer was nothing short of embarrassing.
Governor Christie, you talk a lot about entitlement reform, and you say that that's where the federal government can get savings needed to balance the budget. But can you name even one thing that the federal government does now that it should not do at all?
Yeah. You want one?
I want one.
Yeah. How about one that I've done in New Jersey for the last 6 years, and that's get rid of Planned Parenthood funding for the United States of America?
Anything bigger than that?
Bigger than that? Let me tell you something. When you see thousands upon thousands upon thousands of children being murdered in the womb, I can't think of anything bigger than that.
Yeah, there's only one problem with that, Chris. How much money does the federal government spend on abortion already? $0.00. You're going to cut $0.00. This is your grand strategy. It's so amazing that these guys get away with saying this stuff and the moderators don't really check them because they probably don't know. But the reality is we have something called the Hyde Amendment, which has been slipped into roughly 8,712 bills since last week. Constantly put into bills to reaffirm this, too. And the Hyde Amendment, very simply, is the idea that no federal money can go towards abortion. So even when you have a place like Planned Parenthood, which is in part federally funded, first of all, only 3% of their services are abortion, 97% are not, but for the 3% that are, it's not paid for via tax dollars. You see, people who give a shit about facts and reality, they already know this stuff. But when you're talking about Chris Christie or you're talking about the Republican base, this is just what they want to hear. It's not true. It's not connected to reality. But they, me no like Planned Parenthood. He don't like Planned Parenthood. Me no like big government. He don't like big government. He going to cut stuff. He going to cut Planned Parenthood, which makes up 67% of the federal budget. That Chris Christie, good guy right there. You guys are so silly. You guys are so stupid. Now, when you dig into the details even more here, in total, Planned Parenthood gets about $530 million from the federal government in the form of Medicaid reimbursements. Now, the total federal budget is about $3.9 trillion. So Chris Christie's grand, you know, slash the budget fiscal conservative idea, his balance the budget idea is, it's cut $0.00 because he alluded to the fact that he was specifically referring to abortion. But even if we're kind to him here and we say, well, he really just means all of Planned Parenthood, okay, he wants to save $530 million out of a $3.9 trillion budget. So his grand plan is to cut about 0.001% of the budget. Ooh, you fiscal hawk, you! Now, in all seriousness, you can't even begin to have the conversation about cutting spending until you talk about the military in the United States. We just spoke about it in the last segment. We spend more on the military than the next 14 biggest nations combined, and most of them are our allies. I mean, there is so much waste, fraud, and abuse in the military, it's unbelievable, and it's largely because of corruption and lobbyists and the military-industrial complex. And like I said before, you can cut the military in half, and still have the biggest military in the world by a mile and a half. So you're not serious until you talk about cutting military spending when it comes to being a fiscal conservative. And furthermore, what about corporate welfare? These guys love to attack welfare. Real savings can come from cutting corporate welfare. The big banks get $80 billion a year in the form of a corporate welfare check, subsidies. Or ExxonMobil, who gets billions of dollars a year in subsidies, when they're one of the most profitable corporations in the world already. And they say, well, look, we need this to do research and development. You're not incentivized enough to do research and development without taking billions of dollars from middle-class taxpayers? No, I think you are. You're one of the most profitable corporations in the world. What a joke this is. The rich have taken over the government. They loot the treasury. They rig the rules in their favor. They rob from the middle class. And what's Chris Christie's solution? Let's stop doing family planning for poor and middle-class women. Brilliant, Chris. Yet again, I say, you giant fiscal hawk, you. Look at you, cutting 0.001% of the budget bravely. Okay. Do I have time for one more before I take my first break here? No, but I'm going to do it anyway, because that's how I roll. Marco Rubio, let's do it. I got a lot on everybody, like I said. The only people I left out are Kasich, because, come on, he's John Kasich, and Jeb Bush, because he's Jeb Bush. I was looking for something interesting to come out of his mouth, but no, of course not. Marco Rubio was asked a surprisingly fantastic question by Megyn Kelly at the last Fox News Republican debate about the First Amendment and the right to believe and espouse horrendous beliefs. In America, you actually have a right to do that. So his response here is ridiculous, and it shows that he doesn't really understand or believe in the First Amendment.
The searches for terror issues, for safety issues in America have gone through the roof, increased over 400% since 2008. People are worried. They're worried about what's happening in the country and about a domestic terror attack, as all of you know. Now, in combating this threat, Senator Rubio, you've advocated closing down mosques. We'll get back to you. Well, you have advocated closing down mosques, diners, any place where radicalization is occurring. You told me that. But the Supreme Court has made clear that hateful speech is generally protected by the First Amendment. In other words, radical Muslims have the right to be radical Muslims unless they turn to terror. Doesn't your position run afoul of the First Amendment?
Megan, that's the problem. Radical Muslims and radical Islam is not just hate talk, it's hate action. They blow people up. Look what they did in San Bernardino. Look at the attack they inspired in Philadelphia that the White House still refuses to link to terror, where a guy basically shot a police officer three times. He told the police, I did it because I was inspired by ISIS. And to this day, the White House still refuses to acknowledge that it had anything to do with terror. Look, the threat we face from ISIS is unprecedented.
There has never been a jihadist group like this. They have affiliates in over a dozen countries now. They are the best-funded radical jihadist group in the history of the world, and they have shown a sophisticated understanding of the laws of other countries on how to insert fighters into places, and they are actively plotting to attack us here at home and around the world. We must keep America safe from this threat. And yes, when I am president of the United States, if there is some place in this country where radical jihadists are planning to attack the United States, we will go after them wherever they are, and if we capture them alive, they are going to Guantanamo.
Okay, now this is really telling because he totally dodged the question. He said, well, yeah, if people are plotting against the U.S., we're going to arrest them. Well, he actually said send them to Guantanamo, which would be wildly unconstitutional, and he pretends to care about the Constitution, which is hilarious. But he's dodging the question. He says, yeah, no, if somebody's planning an attack, we're going to stop them. But her question was, and it was a great question, don't people have a First Amendment right to believe horrendous ideologies and even espouse hideous beliefs as long as they don't call for direct threats of violence? So don't you have a right in the U.S. to hate speech? Now, in other places, that's not the case. They don't have First Amendment free speech protections. They're not, like, absolutists on this issue like we are in the U.S. But in the U.S., that is our take. So if you truly believe in the Constitution and you believe in free speech rights, that means people even have a right to say the most hideous, grotesque things you can imagine as long as they're not doing direct threats of violence. And he doesn't have an answer for that. Why? Because Marco Rubio, like most of the other candidates on stage there, their belief is that, for certain ideologies that are shitty, yeah, you let them say whatever the fuck they want because I'm more sympathetic to those ideologies. But for this one specific kind of bad ideology, radical Islam, well, that deserves arrest, and I'm going to send you to Gitmo, and I'm not going to apologize for that. So notice what they're doing here. They're picking amongst shitty ideologies to take away rights. I mean, we obviously all hate radical Islamists. We should all hate white supremacists, and you go down the list here. But what he's saying is, just for this one, we'll take away your rights and ship you to Guantanamo Bay and then act like we didn't violate the Constitution, even though it's the most obvious violation of the Constitution ever. And again, it's so hilarious because this jackass releases ads where he touts his belief in the Constitution. It's not debatable. Right, I agree. But so why are you violating it right here? Why are you debating it here? And the reality is, you know, there are other hideous beliefs that the people have a right to believe those things. If you're a white supremacist, you have a right to be as racist as you fucking want to be, as long as you're not calling for direct threats of violence against people, and as long as you're not literally doing the violence, you have a right to be as fucking racist as you want. Now, I disagree with you, and I'll argue with you on that, but I don't have the ability to lock you up, nor should I, simply based on what goes on in your head. Certain kinds of Marxism historically have led to horrendous violence. Should we lock up anybody who believes that? Or how about, you know, the sovereign citizens and their anti-government ideology, which is, very doctrinaire and almost like a pseudo-religious ideology, and they do violence, they do terrorism in the name of that ideology sometimes. Does that mean every sovereign citizen who shares those beliefs should be locked up or sent to Guantanamo Bay? How about Christian Dominionism or the Phineas Movement, which is a Christian terrorist group in the U.S., self-identified Christian, where they say, yeah, we do violence and we do it in the name of Christianity, and that's how we roll. There was just a terror attack, a shooting in Texas from this group within the past year. Should we lock up everybody who now says, I'm a Dominionist, or I'm somebody who believes in the Phineas Movement? Is that what we should do? We, in the U.S., we gave the KKK the right to march through a mostly minority town. It was a big First Amendment case, the Skokie case. And people who are principled say, look, I hate the KKK with every fiber of my being, but they have a right, as long as they're not doing violence and calling for direct threats of violence here, they have a right to march through a town and spread their racist message if they so choose. Why is it we're able to be principled on that one, but when it comes to radical Islamists, no, lock them up immediately, send them to Guantanamo? Because you do want to single people out for special treatment. Neo-Nazis, I fucking can't stand them. I'll argue against them till I'm blue in the face. But as long as they're not calling for direct threats of violence, or doing violence, do they have a right to believe those things? Fuck yeah, they do. This is the United States of America. This is how the Constitution works. And with Marco Rubio, he ironically claims to believe in the Constitution, but then he gives answers like this, where he totally misses the point, and he says, this one threat is so bad and so scary that forget the Constitution, forget your liberties, forget your rights. I'm just going to send them to Gitmo if I think that they maybe or maybe not are radical Islamists. And again, that also brings up the whole issue of due process. How would you prove that? Like, well, you go to a court, they have horrible beliefs. And? Did they act on them? Did they call for a direct threat of violence? No, but I don't care, I'm going to lock them up anyway. Well, then you're the one who doesn't believe in the Constitution, as you pretend like you do. Okay, quick break. When we come back, Rand Paul gives a good answer, and then Ben Carson face plants, and I got more Marco Rubio with massively ironic points. All right, stay right there, guys. We'll be right back. Back. Alright, surprisingly here, for most of you probably, I will be giving credit to one of the candidates from the debate. Okay. Rand Paul went into detail about the drug war and criminal justice reform and race at the Fox debate. Let's watch.
I'm Mark Watson. I'm known for my checkered views on YouTube, but I'm also a veteran who served in the Army for 8 years. As an African-American living near Ferguson, I've seen the strain between police officers and the communities they serve firsthand. Now, there are great tools like body cameras that can protect both officers and citizens, but we all currently have better cameras in our pockets than in our precincts. Why aren't we using the technology available to better protect our communities?
Senator Paul, that question to you.
You know, I've supported legislation to allow body cameras. I've been to Ferguson. I've been trying to look for solutions to our criminal justice problem. One thing I discovered in Ferguson was that a third of the budget for the city of Ferguson was being reaped by civil fines. People were just being fined to death. Now, you and I and many of the people in this audience, if we get a $100 fine, we can survive it. If you're living on the edge of poverty, you get a $100 fine or your car towed, a lot of times you lose your job. I also think the war on drugs has disproportionately affected our African-American community, and what we need to do is make sure that the war on drugs is equal protection under the law and that we don't unfairly incarcerate another generation of young African-American males. In Ferguson, for every 100 African-American women, there are only 60 African-American men. Drug use is about equal between white and black, but our prisons, 3 out of 4 people in prison are black or brown. I think something has to change. I think it's a big thing that our party needs to be part of, and I've been a leader in Congress on trying to bring about criminal justice reform. Senator Paul, thank you.
Okay. That's bold to do at a Republican debate, where you dive headfirst into the issue of racial disparities when it comes to how the laws are applied. White people and black people do use drugs at about the same rate. And black people are arrested 4 times more often for using drugs. It also works the same with selling drugs, too. White people sell drugs actually much more than blacks do, and blacks get arrested for selling drugs more than whites do. And you can go down the list of the disparities here that can really only be explained not through a class lens, but through a race lens. Now, obviously, class is an issue as well, and one that we need to address in a significant way, but to deny the problem of a disparate treatment and disparate usage of the laws or application of the laws, well, you would just be ignoring something that is clear and demonstrated by the facts and the various studies on this. So for him to say this with a Republican base crowd in Iowa, that doesn't usually go over well with the audience. Now, you heard cheers there, but actually I probably should have let it go a little longer so you got more context, because during the debate, for everything Rand said, it was obvious that he kind of, I don't know if he brought in his own staffers or they paid people that were his supporters to show up and cheer for him for everything. What you found is that his applause was not really organic. Now, again, I agree with him more than anybody else on stage, so I'm not biased against him. If anything, I'm biased in favor of him, but the reality is what it is. It's obvious that at previous debates, when he got a lack of applause for saying certain things that made sense, they realized, look, this looks bad for people watching the debate at home, so let's bring in some of our own people to cheer every time you say something that makes sense. Whereas everybody else, the applause wasn't really specific to a particular area of the room or the auditorium or whatever. With him it was, so it's obvious that they brought people in. But either way, he's right, and it makes sense. And he's bringing up the strategy that they had in Ferguson and that they have at other places around the U.S. of finding people for everything as a tactic to continue to fund the local government and the police department. They go into it knowing, okay, we need to generate X amount of revenue through, or just X amount of money, raise X amount of money through finding the people who live here and just come up with excuses and bullshit reasons, and you find the shit out of them, and you let the white people, quite literally, don't find them, don't go into their neighborhoods, don't look for them doing anything wrong, don't, you know, try to go in there with the whole purpose being, let's raise money. But for the black communities, that was the idea. And this isn't me talking. This is an in-detail, in-depth Ferguson report that came out, and this is exactly what Rand Paul is referring to. And on the issue of body cameras, that's a no-brainer, man. It's a no-brainer. I mean, and people say, oh, they're violating the rights of the cops. Whoa, 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 whoa. You don't have a right to be a police officer. You are hired by the government, and you are the government, and it's supposed to be that you're hired by us, the citizens. It's to protect and serve us, So we're your boss, bitch. So, you know, if you want to do stuff in our name with our money, which is quite literally what you're doing, well, then you have to abide by the rules that we lay out for you. And body cameras are not only good for potential cases of police abuse, but it also protects the police officers. If there's a good cop and somebody attacks you and does something wrong against you, wouldn't you want that recorded so that when it goes to trial, you can say, look, I did nothing wrong here. It was somebody attacking me. So it's wins across the board. An overwhelming majority of the American people are in favor of it. And the places where they have implemented it, though it's not foolproof and there's still things that get by, like Eric Garner, even though that wasn't a body camera, it makes it so that cops are less likely to do fucked up stuff up front because they know they're being recorded. Wild, I know. But that's also a no-brainer. So Rand is right to address that, to address the drug war, and to say, look, this is the future of the Republican Party, because it is. Whatever you say about the Republican base today, and I have a lot to say about that, if you haven't noticed, the younger Republicans are much more libertarian-leaning. That's undeniable. Look at the polls. Majority are now in favor of gay marriage. A majority are now in favor of legalizing marijuana. So the future is not with the Chuck Grassley types or the Rick Santorum types. The future is with, you know, the Rand Paul type of character. Now, he might not be doing well right now, but after this debate, which was his best debate performance yet and his most honest about his libertarian beliefs, what happened? At least according to the Time poll, he came in number two in the debate. Behind Donald Trump, by the way, who wasn't there, which says a lot. So there's even an argument that perhaps he won the debate. I would have loved to have seen what would have happened if he was himself from day one in this campaign. He came out trying to not be like his dad, trying to not be a pure libertarian, if you will. And as a result of that, I think it hurt his campaign. And now I think it's too little too late to try to climb that mountain. Maybe, look, I'm not saying he would have won if he was purely libertarian from day one, but would he have done much, much better? Absolutely. Why? Because that ideology makes a lot more sense than the other idiots on stage. And though the older Republican base right now might not agree with you, make the fucking argument and see if you can change some minds. Perhaps you can. All right, more. Ben Carson. I got two Ben Carson ones, and they're basically just to make you laugh, because I love you that much. Or one of them is to make you laugh. The other one is fairly serious and fucked up. Ben Carson was asked a question about Russian aggression in Ukraine at the Fox News Republican debate, and he just absolutely face-planted.
I think we ought to put in our missile defense system. I think we ought to give Ukraine offensive weapons. And I think we ought to fight them on the economic basis because Putin is a one-horse country, oil and energy. And we ought to fight them on that level. We ought to be helping in terms of the technology for fracking, keeping the price low, quite frankly, because that's what's keeping him contained.
Ben, what the fuck are you talking about? What are you saying? You're not making sense. You're just saying words and hoping that people perceive something off of those words. I have a quote here. He said, Putin is a one-horse country, oil and energy. We ought to fight them on that level. Let's try that again. Putin is a one-horse country, oil and energy. We ought to fight them on that level. Oh, but this is such a great moment because it's so indicative of Ben Carson's campaign. This is Ben Carson's campaign in a nutshell. He's a chicken with its head cut off. He's in way over his head, man. Nobody can take away what he did as a neurosurgeon, and I wouldn't even try. But you could take away virtually everything else about him ever, and I am going to do that. Because we're talking about a guy here who doesn't even believe in evolution. You're a neurosurgeon, you don't believe in evolution? What is that? You're probably the only one in the world. Somebody said, I forget who said it, but they were like, Ben Carson, disproving the myth that neurosurgeons have to be intelligent. Kind of true. No, this is the guy who said that the pyramids were biblical grain silos, totally made up. This is the guy who said that an angel came to him in his sleep and then made him get an A on an exam that he didn't study for, totally made up. This is a guy who spoke about how he was violent when he was younger and he tried to stab his friend and it magically hit the belt buckle because God was looking out for him and this was a sign. That was totally made up too. People even say, when they look back at his history, they couldn't find any evidence that he was like a troubled child. He just kind of made up the story that he's troubled. What are you doing? I don't even know the motivation for that. That doesn't make sense to me. He just seems to lie about everything or just not know shit and have verbal diarrhea. He said at one of the debates, you know, China's in Syria now. To which the Chinese responded, what the fuck? No, we're not. Everybody was like, wait, is that true? It's not true. It's just, he just says shit. And then you run into stuff like this where he says, quote, Putin is a one-horse country, oil and energy. We ought to fight them on that level. Dude, you don't even know what you're saying. I'm going to need you to wrap it up. It's over. It was fun while it lasted. But you're just embarrassing yourself at this point. You know, it's almost like you kind of fear for what he'll be able to do when he's done with this. Because everybody's going to look at Ben Carson. Honestly, I wouldn't want to go to him for neurosurgery now based off of his beliefs in every other field. I don't trust that dude. You can't figure out basic shit. And you say things that make absolutely no sense. And also say, yeah, take off my fucking scalp and poke around in my brain to try to fix shit. I'll pass. You know what? I'll take the second best neurosurgeon, if that's the first. All right, I got one more here on Ben Carson. We're cruising today, man. We are cruising in terms of how many stories we're squeezing in. I didn't think we were going to be able to get through all this. We might actually be able to get through all this. Hey, like them apples. All right, here we go. Ben Carson was asked a question about immigration by a YouTuber, and his answer boils down to, but ISIS. Let's watch.
I'm Lucy Candy, a YouTube creator who immigrated to the United States from Mexico when I was a little girl. Since then, I am proud to say that I served in the armed forces in Iraq, became a citizen, and I am now an entrepreneur. There are many immigrants who contribute positively to the American economy, but some of the comments in the campaign make us question our place in this country. If America does not seem like a welcoming place for immigrant entrepreneurs, will the American economy suffer?
Dr. Carson, that one's for you.
Oh, okay, great. Well, as I said before, we are a land of immigrants, but we have to be intelligent about the way that we form our immigration policies. And that's one of the reasons that I have called on us to declare war on the Islamic State, because we need to reorient our immigration policies and our visa policies for people who are coming into this country, because there are many people out there who want to destroy us. Now, I recognize that the vast majority of people coming in here probably are not those kinds of people, but that's not good enough. If you've got 10 people coming to your house and you know one of them is a terrorist, you're probably going to keep them all out. You know, we probably have to figure out a way to make sure that we keep America safe.
Well, that's lovely. He says, well, yeah, no, I know that most of the people who would come from Syria or elsewhere, they're going to be moderate. We're talking about refugees here. But, I mean, come on, you got to take the chance? You got to keep them all out because some of them are maybe not going to do terrorism. Okay, well, thank you for admitting the thing that we've known all along and that we've said all along, which is that you quite literally are okay with generalizing about all Muslims in this case because you think some might be ISIS. Thank you. At least you're on the record about that, and we can put that to rest. Now, the next thing is, that has nothing to do with the question. Nothing to do with the question. She's like, do you think high-skilled immigrants who are entrepreneurs, do you think they have a place in this country, and don't you think it'll hurt the economy if we don't indeed make them feel welcome? And he's like, that's right, which is why we need to declare war on ISIS. That has nothing to do with the question. She's asking a question about high-skilled immigrants, and you pivot to refugees and fighting ISIS. That's not the same thing. And the refugee question is a separate debate. But the high-skilled immigration question is totally different. We're talking about, and this one is a no-brainer in my opinion, because you're talking about bringing in high-skilled immigrants to help us improve our economy and to help us be more dynamic and create more growth and more jobs, so on and so forth. But he can't help it. He just has to lump everything in together. Foreigner, the other, high-skilled immigrant, refugee, whatever, all bad, potentially ISIS, so keep him out. Does she look like she has a background there? Does she look like she has a radical Islamist background? She just said she fought for the country in Iraq. It's unbelievable. No matter how much they're like, hey, let me tick off the list of shit that you would love me for. They're like, nope, high-skilled immigrants, same as refugees, same as ISIS. Keep them all out because, hey, if you're inviting over 10 people and one of them's a terrorist, what are you going to do? Not going to invite anybody, right? Right, because that's a fair analogy. And 10%, I'm sure that's about the risk for bringing in refugees, 10%. 10% of them will be ISIS. What are you going to do? It is what? Okay, it's so sad. I can't watch this. It hurts my heart when I watch this stuff, literally. Like, I feel like I'm going to have a heart attack when I watch this stuff. All right. Now, sweet Jesus, I gotta get to Marco Rubio. I'm not happy about doing the Marco Rubio segments. He makes so little sense that it's another one who is hard for me to listen to him talk. Him also because of his cadence and his rhythm and his politician talk. Same with Ted Cruz. They're even worse than Sleepy over there. I was going to say Sleepy Spice, like the Spice Girls. Sleepy Spice. I believe there wasn't a Sleepy Spice. Marco Rubio may have broken the world record for irony here. Listen to what he says directly after he professes his undying love for Jesus Christ.
Time magazine once called you the Republican savior. Rush Limbaugh and others said you likely will be president someday. But if you look at the recent average of polls in your home state of Florida, you're in third, trailing Donald Trump by 24 points. If the people who know you best have you there, why should the rest of the country elect you?
Well, let me be clear about one thing. There's only one savior, and it's not me. It's Jesus Christ who came down to earth and died for our sins. And so, and I've always made that clear about that cover story. As far as the polls are concerned, Iowa, on Monday night, you're going to go to a caucus site, and you'll be the first Americans that vote in this election. You will be the first Americans that get to answer the fundamental question, what comes next for this country after 7 disastrous years of Barack Obama? And let me tell you what the answer better not be. It better not be Bernie Sanders. Bernie Sanders is a socialist. I think Bernie Sanders is a good candidate for president of Sweden. We don't want to be Sweden. We want to be the United States of America.
Okay, wrap your mind around what you just saw there. He starts out by saying, there's only one savior. It's not me, even though I love this ego boost and this is really feeding into my narcissism. But it's not me. It is Jesus Christ because I'm a pandering clown. I mean, it's Jesus Christ because I loves me some Jesus. God, I'm so Christian. I love everything about Jesus. He's so great. He's so great. Cut to roughly 18 seconds later, he's bashing socialism. Have you thought this through yet? One sentence, I love Jesus so much, then, socialism is the worst thing ever. Bernie Sanders, socialist, Jewish socialist, am I right? What other Jewish socialists were there that are famous historically and have quite a following today? Let me think about that one a little bit. No, they don't get it. They don't get it. It's a complete and utter contradiction. When you talk about Jesus, now don't get me wrong, if you look at Christianity in totality, you realize you can back up any ideology by cherry-picking doctrine. You can be a super far-right conservative bigot. You can be in favor of slavery and intolerance and genocide and call yourself a Christian. There's backing for that in the Bible. No ifs, ands, or buts about it. But when you talk about the majority of the New Testament, and specifically the message of Jesus, oh, that dude is so liberal that he's way, way far to the left of anything I've ever seen. Way far to the left of me. I mean, the dude makes Noam Chomsky look like Ann Coulter with how liberal he is. We're talking about a guy who was a committed pacifist. Turn the other cheek. What does that mean? Hey, oh, you hit this one cheek of mine? Well, let me present you with the other one. Hit that too. Go for it, buddy. So you don't even fight back. You don't even believe in self-defense. You are a pacifist. Is that your approach to fighting ISIS, Marco? No, that's not, right? And look, the Bible, and again, specifically the parts with Jesus, it's flat-out anti-rich. It's not even, like, measured and balanced and within reason where, you know, it's like a position that Bernie might have or I might have, where I don't want to scrap capitalism. I basically believe in social democracy, where you have a mix of socialism and capitalism, and, you know, you let people get rich within reason, but you have universal health care and education and stuff. Jesus is like, no, fuck all that. If you're rich, you can't even get into heaven. Hey, you had your happy times, and your kingdom was on earth. You had all the luxury around you. I'm not going to let you into heaven. This is for the poor. This is for the downtrodden. So Marco Rubio's political philosophy is the polar opposite of Jesus Christ. But he's one of the first politicians to go out there and say, I love Jesus. I love everything about Jesus, except that I hate everything about Jesus. It's so sad. I can't believe, if I'm a Democrat man and I'm running, I am calling out this hypocrisy so much to the point that I will make even Republican voters go, okay, okay, we get it. He's not like Jesus, even though he pays lip service to Jesus. I get it, I get it, I get it. It's Bernie Sanders is unquestionably the candidate in the race that most embodies the philosophy of Jesus. Again, he's not anywhere near as far left as Jesus, but he most embodies that philosophy, and Marco goes from praising Jesus to mocking Bernie Sanders. And also, who doesn't love the random hate for Sweden? They talk about Sweden in the Republican primary as if it's Somalia. Guys, Sweden, universal health care, universal education, paid vacation time by law. One of the happiest countries in the world. They self-report that. They're like, ha, Sweden, high quality of life, better health care system than ours, better middle class. Forget it. Bernie Sanders, socialist, bad. I love Jesus. Have I mentioned that? Okay, I got to take a break here. When we come back, I have for you guys one more Marco Rubio, and then we'll get into – I got some from the undercard debate because you're watching Secular Talk. What the fuck do you expect? Of course, I'm the only person in the world that watches the undercard debate and then dares to talk about it. And then I have a special little segment for you at the end of the show. I hope we have time to get to it. It's Ted Cruz in a nutshell, all of his awkwardness in a nutshell. He had such a great moment on the campaign trail that just exposes him for exactly what he is. Stay right there. We'll be right back with all that stuff and much more.
Ah!
Son of a bitch, we're back. All right, Marco Rubio, one more on this clown, and then we'll get to some of the undercard stuff, which I always, for some weird reason, kind of like more. I do. Because I think they let it all hang out more in the undercard because they rarely have a shot. So, Rick Santorum, for example, I didn't clip this one out, but at the beginning of the undercard debate, he ranted for like 3 minutes about how it's so fucked up that they even call the undercard debate the undercard debate. It's like, dude, you're fucking up your chances even more by like letting everybody know your massive irrelevancy. Just be happy you're there at all and fucking make your case, but he had to bitch because he's Rick Santorum. All right, Marco Rubio, and then we move on to that. Marco Rubio went full Christian theocrat at the Fox News debate. Check it out.
I think if you do not understand that our Judeo-Christian values are one of the reasons why America is such a special country, you don't understand our history. You see, why are we one of the most generous people in the world? No, the most generous people in the world. Why do Americans contribute millions of dollars to charity? It is not because of the tax write-off. It is because in this nation, we are influenced by Judeo-Christian values that teach us to care for the less fortunate, to reach out to the needy, to love our neighbor. This is what's made our nation so special. And you should hope that our next president is someone that is influenced by their faith. Because if your faith causes you to care for the less fortunate, it is something you want to see in your public figures. And when I'm president, I can tell you this, my faith will not just influence the way I'll govern as president, it will influence the way I live my life. Because in the end, my goal is not simply to live on this earth for 80 years, but to live in eternity with my Creator. And I will always allow my faith to influence everything I do.
Okay. I don't know why people don't make a bigger deal out of comments like that. Like, we all just accept it as like, oh, he's religious and he's making a religious argument about how he's going to live in heaven forever with Jesus and the space fairies and Marilyn Monroe and Elvis Presley and Frank Sinatra, and it's going to be like a dream, basically, where everybody plays ping pong together and they watch movies and watch football games and stuff. Like, okay, that's a crazy person. You're talking about a crazy person. If they really believe that. Now, don't get me wrong. If you have faith and you acknowledge that it's faith and you're like, I hope this is the case. I don't know, but I hope this is the case. This is, you know, the weird gray zone of, you know, we don't know everything about the way the world works, and therefore I am going to choose to believe this thing, which I know is unlikely, but I have faith and I accept it as faith. It ain't fact. It's faith. That's one thing, but that indeed is not the camp that Marco Rubio is in. He's in the camp of, I'm going to live forever with Jesus in heaven afterwards. I care about eternal life. Okay, well then perhaps you need Thorazine. Perhaps you need Seroquel. Perhaps you need any kind of antipsychotic drug to bring you back down to earth, and you want to run this earth. You want to run America, the most powerful nation in the world. We have the biggest military by a mile and a half. And you're saying, no, I care more about the stuff that's not happening, but I think is happening in the sky. No, this is something that should be a deal breaker for people. But at a Republican debate, you're, oh, yes, oh, he's so holy and so special. And also, I can't stand the fact that he's basically blowing himself and the entire Republican base and the audience there about how great they are to the poor. You know, don't you want a president who's influenced by their Judeo-Christian values and they care for their neighbor and look out for the poor? Okay, I want a president who cares about those things, but not because of space fairies and mythology. I want a president who cares about those things because it's the right thing to do and it's the right thing to care about on its own merits, not because of some weird book that was written thousands of years ago that also had slavery in it. Call me crazy. But he's trying to pretend like, yeah, it's our team that cares about the poor and wants to look out for your neighbor and all that stuff. No. You guys actively fight against all of the policies that would help your neighbor and help the poor and help the downtrodden. You spend a lot of time that same night making those arguments. So don't tell me, see, they know that their ideas are not popular. So what do? They have to pretend like they believe other things during the debate. And they also just do flat-out open calls for theocracy. When he says, this country, what makes us so great is our Judeo-Christian values, that indeed is not the case because we don't have Judeo-Christian values in our government. We have a secular government. Marco, the first sentence of the First Amendment in the Constitution says we do not establish a religion. So it's the exact opposite of what you're claiming. The amazing thing is, you can't make it any more obvious than it is in the United States of America that we are a secular nation and that we don't establish a government, and these jackasses still go out there and say it anyway. Judeo-Christian values that we're founded on, even though the first fucking sentence of the first fucking amendment is a secular government. Piss off, man. I can't stand these jackasses. It's like whenever they make a comment, it's the inception of stupid. It's not just stupid one layer deep. It's stupid within stupid within stupid. Because they pretend like they care for the poor. They don't. They pretend like it's a Christian nation. It's not. How many ways can you be wrong in a single statement that was under 2 minutes? I don't know, but again, he's gunning for the record here. All right, I got more Bernie bashing, because why the fuck not? This is from Mike Huckabee. Mike Huckabee took a shot at Bernie Sanders and socialism at last week's GOP undercard debate. Let's watch.
Governor Huckabee, here in Iowa, 43% of Democratic caucusgoers describe themselves as socialists. That's a higher number than those who say they are capitalists. Guess you could say they're feeling the burn. This is a country rooted in capitalism, the United States of America. How did we get here?
I honestly don't understand how anybody with IQ above plant life would honestly think that we would be better off if we let the government have all of the private property and that the government would dole out what they thought we should have. I'm not feeling the burn, Bill. I'm not feeling it. And when Bernie Sanders promises these kids free college, I'm telling him, because I get asked, what about free college? I said, look, if we give you free college when you're 20, pal, you're going to be paying for it when you're 30, when you're 40, and when you're 50. There is no such thing as the government giving you anything. They will definitely make a mess of it. And I just think there are a lot of people who have never understood the basic understanding of economics.
Oh, the irony is overwhelming. Dude, you just said that socialism is Marxism. You just equated the two. In your mind, they were obviously conflated, that socialism or social democracy is Marxism. And then he's like, you know, some people, they just don't understand basic economics. No, you don't understand basic economics or basic political definitions. The government. Who wants the government to come and take all the private property? That's right. Who does want that? Bernie doesn't want that. Do any democratic socialists want that? Have you heard any of them argue for that? No. No, you haven't. No, you haven't. So please tell me more about how everybody else does not understand economics, even though you just demonstrated you don't understand economics or basic political definitions. They're so goofy. They're so clownish. Now, to his free college point, I love the smugness in that comment, too. You know, people say, what about free college? I say, well, you're going to be paying it off when you're like 40, 50. Well, if you gave a shit to actually read about Bernie Sanders' plan to see who indeed pays for it, his college proposal is paid for via a transaction tax on Wall Street. So that's not true that other people are – that you're going to be paying for it and, you know, hey, it's going to cost you X amount and it's going to be more expensive and you're going to pay it until your 50s or 60s. No, you just made all of that up. Plan is crystal clear. You can go and read it. Check the Google machine, Huck. You'll see it. Transaction tax on Wall Street pays for that. And furthermore, let's say, for argument's sake, let's say that wasn't the case. Now, that is the case, but let's just say, for argument's sake, to be kind to Mike Huckabee here, that's not the case. Mike, we spend a tremendous amount of money, an unnecessary amount of money, on our bloated military budget, which is bigger than the next 14 biggest nations combined. We have waste. When it comes to corporate welfare, we're subsidizing ExxonMobil and these big banks, which are robbing us. You don't even need to raise taxes to fund universal college. All you have to do is reallocate the money that's going towards corrupt, shitty things and put it towards education. Mike Huckabee and the rest of these clowns are so fucking ignorant, and they're condescending to you as if, you know, you haven't figured it out and you're not a realist and you just need to get the way the world works. No, that's just the thing, Mike. Everybody out there who's self-describing as a socialist or a democratic socialist or anything else that's left-wing, you know what they fucking did? They learned shit. They looked at how, hey, look at what they do in Germany. Hey, look at what they do in Britain. Hey, look at what they do in Sweden and Norway and Denmark. Hey, we're kind of getting fucked here, aren't we? Why don't our tax dollars pay for universal college? Why don't our tax dollars pay for health care? Why do we have to worry about going bankrupt if somebody has a spleen surgery? They don't have to worry about that. Hey, why do they get paid maternity leave and paternity leave and paid vacation time by law? Why are they treated more like human beings and not like fucking animals that rent themselves out on the market, rent their labor on the marketplace, and get taken advantage of nonstop? He's the one that's ignorant. He's the one that doesn't understand the political definitions. He's the one that doesn't understand economics. And the entire time he looks down on you. So you wonder why Mike Huckabee's polling at negative 12%? Maybe this has something to do with it. And perhaps maybe this free college idea that you're mocking so gleefully, Mike, is one of the many reasons why Bernie's doing well. All right, now, Little Ricky Santorum. Rick Santorum offered us what may literally be the least accurate assessment of the Obama administration in human history. Let's check it out here and try not to laugh.
The president says politics in America have become meaner over the past several years with him in the White House. 2 weeks ago at the State of the Union, he said the following. A president with the gifts of Lincoln or Roosevelt might have better bridged the divide. Lincoln and Roosevelt. It's pretty good company. If he is right, do Republicans share some of the blame? The President of the United States has been the most divisive president, and certainly in my lifetime. This is a man who constantly he is not trustworthy. You can't sit down and negotiate with him. He won't keep a deal. We've heard that over and over again. And here's what he does that really, really creates the friction in Washington. He personally attacks people. He ascribes motives to them that aren't true. And then he tears them down. How are you going to work with someone if you don't treat them decently, honestly, and respectfully?
Okay, you just described you. You're describing yourself here. Did you not hear what you were saying? Everything, that's the clearest case of projection I've ever seen in my life. Let me tar Obama with everything that I do and everything that the Republican Party now does. What a joke. So let's lay this out for you a little bit. He says Obama, I mean, come on, he doesn't compromise. He doesn't treat the other side with respect. I mean, come on here. Here's the problem. Rick, the Republicans broke the filibuster record under Obama. More filibusters than any other Congress in U.S. history. Why is Obama blocking everything the Republicans want to do? Why is he so impossible to work with? He doesn't compromise. He doesn't negotiate. Have we filibustered 8 times yet today? What time is it? Okay, can we get a few more filibusters in before the day's through, please? Please. They're just ahistorical, and they just do not give a shit about facts. Another example. Rick, the Republicans tried to repeal Obamacare over 55 times. If that's them, you know, reaching out to Obama and trying to compromise and negotiate, they have a weird way of showing it, a really weird way of showing it. They hate him so much that he's made it so that they oppose their own ideas that many times they came up with. So even sticking with this Obamacare example, Richard Nixon, was the first person to propose an Obamacare-like system, an individual mandate system, where you keep the private insurance companies intact and you make it so that people have to buy from the private insurance companies, and you do an expansion of Medicaid. You do an expansion of health care for the poor. But that's only exactly what Obamacare is. Nixon proposed it. In the 1990s, you had Chuck Grassley and Newt Gingrich and other congressional Republicans proposing it. You had the right-wing think tank, the Heritage Foundation, writing policy papers saying, this is our pragmatic response to the crazy liberal idea of universal health care and a single-payer system. This is what we propose as the counter to that. So then when Obama starts the negotiation by giving ground already and saying not single-payer but a public option, so he starts out by caving, the negotiating process and the middle ground became, okay, we're going to do your original idea. Because then the Republicans took the position of, we don't want to change anything at all. Leave everything exactly how it is. 45,000 people dying every year because they don't have access to basic health care in America? Leave it alone. Nobody gives a shit. So then the compromise position was your idea, Nixon's idea, the Heritage Foundation's idea, Newt Gingrich's idea. And then what do? We're against it, socialism, even though we came up with it, socialism, because he proposed it. Black Democrat proposes it. We're against it by definition. And here's Rick Santorum saying, you know, President Obama is so divisive. He doesn't compromise. He doesn't negotiate. Obama has, for example, decreased the deficit tremendously. He inherited a $1.4 trillion annual deficit. It's now down to about $480 billion. Cut it big time. Now all of a sudden the Republicans are, give him credit for doing the thing that we always say he should do. No, never do that. Ever, ever, ever. Here's a guy who grew the private sector by over 12 million jobs. Do they have anything positive to say about private sector growth or the stock market rebounding tremendously from where he inherited it from the Bush administration? Got nothing to say about that either. And even when he does shit that totally in every way, shape, and form abandons not only the progressive base and the liberal base, but even like the moderate base, they still don't give him credit. They love the NSA spying program under Bush. Obama made it worse, took away your civil liberties even more. I can't stand that shit. He's dead wrong for that. Did he get any praise from the Republicans for doing exactly the thing that they said they wanted? No. Did he get any praise from the Republicans for continuing the unconstitutional illegal drone program, which I fucking hate with the burning passion? No. Even when he does exactly what they want, they don't give him any credit. So spare me your bullshit argument, Rick Santorum. The problem is you and your ilk. Look in the mirror. Okay. I have 10 minutes left and two stories to get to. Let's see how far we get. Carly Fiorina is the next one. Carly Fiorina is going to shove her foot in her mouth again on the issue of foreign policy. This is something that she does quite often. Let's watch.
Does ISIS threaten our ability to survive as a nation?
Well, let me tell you this. Newsflash, President Obama. Newsflash, Mrs. Clinton. Climate change is not our most pressing national security threat. Actually, it is ISIS, followed closely by Iran, and those two things are linked, so that when our president cozies up to Iran, all of our allies in the Middle East who are ready to help us defeat ISIS wonder whose side we're on, and the truth is, under this president, we are on Iran's side, not our allies who would help us defeat ISIS.
Okay, that is deep, profound ignorance about the Middle East. She just said, our allies wonder whose side we're on. No, we should wonder whose fucking side they're on. Our allies, you mean like Saudi, the Wahhabi terror state, the Salafi terror state, the people who admittedly share the exact same ideology as ISIS and have funded this ideology throughout the world for decades. And she's going to say, yeah, our lovely, brilliant allies are questioning our loyalty. How about we start questioning their fucking loyalty? How about the fact that there are redacted pages in the 9/11 Commission which talk about how Saudi Arabia helped fund Al-Qaeda, which led to 9/11? How about that? No, no, no. But see, it's us. It's us. Carly Fiorina does not understand anything about the Middle East. She says ISIS and Iran are linked, she says. No, no, no. It is the exact opposite. Iran is fighting ISIS. Iran, they're Shia. ISIS, they're Salafi, so extremist Sunnis. One of the leading forces that are countering ISIS and al-Nusra and other jihadist groups in the region, it is the Shia militias. It is the Syrian army, mostly Shia. It's Hezbollah, Shia. Come on, man. You can't. I mean, this is just embarrassing at this point. Because you just don't know what the fuck you're talking about. You don't understand basic facts about the Middle East. You don't get the Sunni-Shia divide. You don't get that Iran is one of the leading forces countering ISIS and Salafism, along with the Kurds, by the way. So you're just... you're a joke at this point, Carly, and she couldn't get through the segment without downplaying the effects of climate change because she's a clown. I mean, really? Climate change is going to lead to drought, famine, increased natural disasters, war. This really affects our existence, not only as a nation, but as a fucking species. And she's like, no, that's not a big threat. ISIS, they're the biggest threat, and Iran is linked to them, even though they're one of the major groups fighting them. So by us aligning with the people who are fighting ISIS, in reality, we're doing the opposite. And our allies would help us fight ISIS. I mean, they would, as soon as I stop funding them. But they would help us fight ISIS. But they just look at us and what we're doing with Iran, and they go, that's the problem. Now I'm not sure if I'm going to fight them because of how you're acting. No, you're not sure you're going to fight them because you fucking agree with the ideology and you've been funding them and you've created this monster and now you can't combat it effectively. All right, and finally, I left just enough time here for Mr. Awkward himself, Ted Cruz. Oh, you guys, fuck, I forgot you guys aren't going to be able to see this. I'll describe what's happening. Ted Cruz gave us one of the most awkward moments ever in political campaign history in the U.S. Enjoy.
Do you think you can win his head?
Are you taking
on?
Good job.
Oh my goodness. I felt bad for Ted Cruz there. I had that feeling in the pit of my stomach. Like, no, what did I just watch? That's the most awkward thing I've ever seen in my life. Oh. For everybody listening on the live show and you couldn't see it there, it's Ted Cruz getting on his bus and it's somebody with his daughter leaving and he's like, hey, are you guys going somewhere? Ted Cruz, me. And she does, like, a flick thing to his nose, like a getaway kind of flick. And Ted thinks, oh, cute and playful. He goes in for a little peck and a hug, and she's, like, pulling away a little bit. And he of course, being Ted Cruz, he's incapable of sensing human emotions and feelings and feeling for other people. So he just blows by all the obvious signs that she wants to be left alone, and he pushes in further to give her a kiss on the cheek. She's like, yes! And she's like, stop! And he looks at the camera like, ooh, did you catch that? That's not good. Play it off, Ted. Go back into sleazy politician mode. And then he walks on the bus. No, here's why I love this story. It's a nothing story. We're making a mountain out of a molehill. Everybody knows that. It's clear. But to me, this is the embodiment of Ted Cruz. This is the encapsulation of his entire campaign, his entire persona, and just him. Smarmy, sleazy, fake, contrived, not at all genuine, trying to ride a wave of narcissism into the White House for self-aggrandizement reasons. And everything is just fucking planned and like, he's thinking in his head as he's looking at this, I can now kiss and hug my daughter to make the media think, oh, how cute that he's kissing and hugging his daughter. Go in for it, Ted. He goes in for it. She's rejecting. He's like, no, we must make this work because I am standard sleaze ball fuckhead politician. Let me keep moving in. And it just gets worse and worse. And finally, like, okay, brush it off and move along. That's everything about Ted Cruz right there. Everything is calculated and weird and not at all genuine, and he just oozes that all the time. And the thing that amazes me is that I don't know what percentage of the Republican base notices that. He has a decent amount of support. I mean, he's number two, number three, depending on what poll you look at and what state right now and the national polls, he's up there in the top three. That says a lot about who the Republican base is, doesn't it? That you can't see through this caricature of a human being? Well, hopefully this might have an effect where they realize it, though I doubt it, because just like the Trump monster, the more he does shit that's weird and awkward and fucked up, the more people go, that's my kind of guy, man, awkwardly kiss his daughter and try to fake human emotion. I like that. I fake human emotion all the time, too. Bitch, make me a sandwich. Okay, all right, I'm out of time, guys. I love you. We got the Iowa caucus tonight. No, I'm obviously not doing any live coverage, but I think TYT is. If you want to listen to some live coverage, go check them out. We'll see you, and obviously we'll have big news for you tomorrow, so I'm sure a lot of you guys will be glued to the TV. Everybody have a good one. I will be as well. Peace.